When the servers go down, we'll tell you what's up. You're listening to Realm Maintenance.
The following bonus episode is part of Yearly Maintenance 2018, a six-day series that revisits previous guests on the show throughout the year, listening to them talk about their favorite podcasting moments as a content creator, the first podcast that they listened to, and much more, including their attempts to try to predict what would happen in 2018, weeks or, in many cases, months before it actually happened. While I did attempt to record this bonus segment with every guest that I had on throughout the year, you may notice some time skips at certain places in this series because a few of the bonus segments were omitted due to technical difficulties or simple unavailability. With that said, let's now return to Yearly Maintenance 2018. This segment of Yearly Maintenance is being recorded on April 20th, 2018, or if you're in Australia, April 29th, 2018. With me right now, from Australia, is Tempest and Wembley from the WoW pre-show. Folks, I've been asking each person on these segments a few prediction questions, and then a few questions related to podcasting. Let's hit up the prediction questions first. Tempest, Battle for Azeroth is going to launch on August 14th. When do you predict we will see patch 8.1, the first content patch?
Well, judging on this expansion, isn't there a set time of 55 days?
Was that what it is? 77 days.
77 days, there you go. Mm. Well, I imagine it will be 77 days after August the 14th.
Do you think that will actually persist then?
I'm not sure whether it will really totally be. Then I think that there's a system in place where they aim for that period that obviously is, you know, that 11 weeks is what they decided is a manageable time to get a decent amount of content out and to keep things fresh and to keep things moving. And I think they've got a definite timeline about that, and things get done, and if they're not done, they miss out on going in that patch. And I think there's definitely a new philosophy on how often and how regular that happens. Whether they tweak that 11 weeks to make it 12 weeks or 10 weeks, time will tell. But I think there's a definite philosophy on it.
I feel like they may tweak it, and Wem, tell me what you think about my opinion here, because 11 weeks from August 14th would be October 30th, which is literally 3 days before BlizzCon 2018.
Mm. Oh, you betcha. That's when it's going to drop.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't think so. I think they'll be busy. I reckon they'll come the week after.
No. That's what I was thinking. Either the 6th or the 13th of November, I'm thinking.
Yeah. No, I think it'll be after. They'll be too busy before.
Because Hazacostas has the trains running on time. That's what it is. Do you want me to tell you the Hazacostas lore according to Wem?
Yes.
This is not really according to Wem. Yes, but I just want to emphasize.
This is the secret sauce. I'll tell you what I think the secret sauce is. What he says now is because they've been so stung by, and he was so stung by what happened in Warlords, this is what happens now. They get a big whiteboard and they say, here's everything that needs to come out in the next patch. Go your hardest at getting all of that done. And then when that patch is ready to drop, they say, okay, everything that is 100% ready is going in that patch. Everything that is not will come out when it's ready after, but that patch is going to drop. So then they drop the patch. Or the OCD nerd boys who are all ready to hit the forums and say, you lied about the patch, can't do anything because the patch did drop. So check, that's done. And then what happens is a couple of weeks later, they go, oh, bonus, here's the other feature. They didn't tell us that was coming in the patch, but they wanted that to come in the patch, but it didn't fit. They didn't get it done in time. But instead of, like in the past, saying, well, we're going to have to hold the patch until 100% of what we want in it is ready, they now say, we'll drop the patch on the day we want to with everything that is complete, and we'll go as hard as we can to get all of that done. And then the rest we put out in the following weeks. And now instead of people saying, you've let us down, they say, oh, and you gave us a couple of things straight after the patch drop. That's amazing.
And then that makes the content flow even smoother because then there's stuff happening between the one big content patch dropping and the other one. It sounds solid to me. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw something like that.
Yeah, I think that's what's been happening.
Yeah. Next prediction question, we'll start here with Wembley. We know that Stromgarde is going to be the first war front in battle for Azeroth. What other battlegrounds in Azeroth do you feel will be converted into a war front?
I don't know. Stromgarde. That's a nice big size too, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it'll
I played it on the beta, and it's basically, it uses up most of the zone of the Arathi Islands for it.
Okay, so you've got to, so are you constantly running? I haven't done it yet. Are you constantly running back to Stromgarde with what you've collected or stuff like that?
Well, how does it? Stromgarde's your objective, what you're trying to conquer. You start actually from a fortification that's some distance away from Stromgarde. Like Stromgarde's the goal.
Okay, I think you could do stuff like, you could do the outside zone version of Dire Maul, something like that, a big sprawling area. That could be a candidate.
Dire Maul would be good.
It would be good. Because you wouldn't have to use the instanced part that is the dungeon.
No.
Yeah.
Because you can actually ride in and around Dire Maul as it is.
Yeah, yeah.
What other big things like that have you got?
I reckon it'd be good to do it in Stormwind Keep.
I think, yeah, I think I'd love to see some battleground. Anyway, that's, well, I've gone off tangent. Maybe Ravenholt Manor would be good too.
Yeah, that's unused. That'd be good. Something there.
Just trying to think of all the big sort of castles and zones and stuff like that you could use. I think there's a lot of opportunity.
I'd love to see a certain supposed Worgen capital be used since it's not being used for anything right now.
Yeah, that'd be good.
But you don't know what they're going to do with that after the whole loss of Lordaeron.
Yeah.
They might redo that.
They might. I'm not really sure. There have been rumors about like Gilneas, the Night Elves losing World Tree in Nordrassil. Mm. There have been talks about like story wise of the Night Elves like helping the Worgen reclaim Gilneas, and Night Elves just relocating to Gilneas. Who knows?
Mm. I don't. I guess this is coming out after the launch, so it's not technically a spoiler. So how good did the the gates of Gilneas all torn asunder and just the walls and everything when you're flying into that scenario look fantastic?
Oh, yeah.
I think that definitely is that would be some good playable area.
For sure. Do you have an idea for a Warfront Tempest?
No.
That's fine. That's just fine.
No. No. All right. No, Barry. No.
Last prediction question, Tempest, I'll start with you, and I feel like this is one that you can give an answer to.
Okay.
Between the three of us, who's going to hit level 120 first with our main character?
Well, Wem and I usually level together, so if it's us, it will be both of us at the same time. We're almost, in sync with that. Neither one of us, we explore together, and the first time through, it's all done. We all do it together. And I did hear that Wem was planning on taking some time off.
Well,
unfortunately, I won't be taking.
We're coming back from a big holiday the week before, so I don't know how that'll go.
I can see us smashing out a couple of weekends for sure.
I think it'll be you, right?
But we certainly won't have the.
Do you? I'm trying to think back on what I've heard from you in the past. Do you smash it out, or do you just go take it easy?
My routine has changed from expansion to expansion, but I will say that I feel it's going to be you guys because August 14th is still deep into summer, and considering I work in a job in which it's very much in a tourist trap area, and we are busy through Labor Day weekend, which is the first weekend in September, my playtime for Battle for Azeroth is going to be a bit limited until we get into like mid-September. So I have a feeling you guys may be able to put in more hours than I do.
See, once it hits mid-September, then you're getting towards my next holidays. So all bets could be off. I could level a different turn up to 121st. But anyway, we'll see.
Yep, we shall. All right, moving on to podcast questions here. And these may sound a little bit familiar from something I did back in episode 100 of the show, in which I was just kind of asking people questions about, you know, their podcasting history, experiences, suggestions, and all that. And I'll ask each of these questions. Tempest, what is the first podcast you listened to ever, Blizzard-related or otherwise?
Well, as there's a lot of Bind Not Equipped listeners that are just cringing, going, oh, my gosh, she's about
to... Has she listened to one?
I, as a rule, I don't listen to podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll just say that up. The only podcast I really listened to a bit of was Control It Wow. I don't listen to any anymore. And ours. I've listened to ours occasionally, which is funny because I don't think you've listened to the new one. I share the same reactions when I'm listening to it as I have in real life. Like it's the first time I've heard it, yet I was there.
Something about that temporal memory may be applying
I think there's a different memory assigned for when you're talking as to when you're listening.
Right, right.
So I people have a far better memory of our shows than I do.
All right.
I was just there.
How about you, Wem? What's the first podcast that you remember listening to ever?
I think it was The Instance.
That good old answer.
I'm pretty sure the people
I ask are going to get me.
I know. I wish I could say something different, but just for variety.
Oh,
it's fine. I think it was. Well,
no, it's the first one I listened to. It's the first one I listened to.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. So the next question I have may not be applicable for Tempest because it was going to be if besides shows that you're involved in, is there any podcast in particular that you would recommend people to? Actually, I think you might have an answer, Tempest, now that I think about it, even if you don't necessarily listen to it.
Do I have an answer? Well, you should listen to some podcast, that's for sure.
Well, besides blatantly promoting my show, there may be the third part of this of the Bind on Equipped trio has a podcast.
Yes, you could listen to the
Witch versus Doomsday the Doomsday Clock.
Yes, you could do that.
One that I've just recently started on and am really enjoying is
If you are going,
I know what it is. It's merely a setback. I was going to say there will be setbacks. Merely a setback. I'm really enjoying.
Yeah, is a pretty solid show. I'm hoping it's still going on by the time people are hearing this because new WoW shows. If they are still going on after 6 months from their first episode, if Merely a Setback still going on by the time people are listening to this, I think you're going to be listening to those guys for quite some time. They got a good thing going on there.
So on a different topic, there is another podcast that Wem makes me listen to that I quite enjoy, and I don't even know what it's called, but it's with
Kermode Mayer's film podcast.
Yeah,
not a WoW podcast.
That's fine. This question can apply to like Blizzard podcasts or just general podcasts too.
And also, seeing as most gamers love the Marvel movies, you have to listen to the Empire Movie Show podcast spoiler specials specifically on the Marvel shows. They are so funny and really well done, and they always have interviews with like the directors and stars. So. Check those out. Just look for them through iTunes. They are unmissable. Once you've heard one, like me, you'll go back and listen to all the spoiler shows.
Awesome. All right, last question I have for you folks. Wembley, from the very first episode of Buying on Equip to this point in time right now, what has been your favorite experience as a content creator, podcaster, etc.?
Probably laughing with my co-hosts has been the most fun, which is not a specific event, but getting to meet the Blizzard devs has been amazing. Like, you know, we've been so lucky to have a good relationship with Blizzard, the guys in Australia in Sydney. So you know, we've met Ian Hezacostas and Celestalon
and
Jen. I can't remember her last name.
Jen, she was an artsy person.
An artiste. And, it's just been really, amazing. And we went to they had a special launch for Legion in Melbourne.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That was an amazing night. We met a lot of fellow content creators there.
Not just our interview with Ian, which was, you know.
No, getting to hang out with him. We had lunch with him the next day.
Super privileged. But to then hang out with him and have lunch with him and meet the person who is Ian Hazzikostas we were so honoured to do those kinds of things.
I took his last dumpling.
You did.
Which I think is important.
There's a bit of trivia. Who took Ian Hazzikostas' last dumpling?
Yes. Oh, that's not who you think.
Yeah.
What about you, Tempest? Anything you would add as far as your favourite experience?
I think some of my favourite things is the people that we've met along the way, not just the Blizzard people, but the people that have come through our guild and through our lives that have changed them and impacted them and become, you know, part of who we are. You know, the famous episode 13 where I insinuated that someone may be gay.
Which didn't matter.
No, which we're totally okay with.
But you don't want to misconstrue someone.
He wasn't gay. And he was up for grabs. I'm not sure if he still is.
Go get him, ladies.
Go get him. But, you know, Hypnotoad became part of our guild for, you know, a really long time. And, you know, him and Cypher then went on to do their podcast. And Tio and I can't think of his name right at this second, but, you know, they've gone on to do their SWOTOR podcast. And, you know, those kinds of seeing that we've had this effect that has then flowed on has been really nice, and to have met those people and shared their lives for even, you know, shared their journey for a short time has been really lovely.
Awesome. Well, before this segment ends, you two, I feel like there's one bit of unfinished business, one thing that I want to bring back, if you'll allow me.
Scary.
And that's the BOE Wiki Super Challenge.
Oh, yeah.
Have to get that going again.
I haven't done that for ages.
Hold on to your hats. It's time for World of Warcraft's poorest quiz, the BOE Wiki Super Challenge. Here's your host, Roll!
Oh, this is going to be terrible.
All right, so I could be a place, I could be a person, I could be a piece of loot, an event, or even an expansion. At one time, I could have been Chris Metzen, but not this time. What will it be for this possibly final BOE Wiki Super Challenge? So here's how it's going to work. I'm pretty sure I'm doing this right. I'm going to give Wem and Temp 6 clues ranging in difficulty from legendary all the way down to trash. You two will use your name as a buzzer. There's some other extra rules, et cetera, et cetera. You should know them by now. That's pretty much the thing. Are you two ready?
Yes. No.
This is your last chance for points and glory. Wem,
I apologize to anyone who's ever admired me in any way.
All right, let's start off for 10 points. Legendary! Okay. I'm going to replace that, or maybe I won't. Okay, clue, it's alive. It's alive!
It's a Murloc.
Well, you didn't use your name for starters. Jeez.
Okay. Yes, Tim?
It's a Murloc.
No.
I know what you're talking about. I just can't pin it down. Right.
Wem, how about you?
No, I've got nothing.
No? All right. Let's move on for 8 points. Epic! The likes of it haven't been seen in 10,000 years.
Wem.
Yes.
Is it Illyria?
No.
Okay.
The likes of it. Sort of,
well, that doesn't – you don't just say – you wouldn't say the likes of her. That would just give it away.
All right.
Have a guess, Temp?
No guesses.
All right. For 6 points, rare. It's too late to get it now, but you might be able to get it later.
Goodness.
It's a pet of some kind. Or a mount.
No guesses?
No.
All right. I think that brings us to 4 points. Uncommon. Gosh.
We're terrible at this.
when you could get it, you had to tell your friends to leave you alone. To leave you alone.
So that's a druidy thing, maybe.
To leave you alone. Maybe I don't have it. Zooey will know. Blixie will know.
I love this so far. There is someone out there who knows what this answer
screaming,
is.
Screaming.
Someone who's so familiar with the WoW Wiki Super Challenge. All right, shall we move on to common?
Yeah.
All right, for 2 points. Common. It's currently a legendary piece of loot in Hearthstone.
Oh, that's an unfair clue.
That's me out.
It's a legendary piece of loot.
I'll make it a little easier. I'll make it a little easier because we are at common, and since you aren't familiar with Hearthstone. It's currently a legendary weapon in Hearthstone.
So then it must be a weapon then. A druid weapon. You should know you're a druid.
No, I don't.
Well, if it's a weapon, it's got to be a weapon, surely.
Yeah.
Do they have other things that aren't weapons as weapons? Do you play Hearthstone?
I do play Hearthstone.
Come on.
Not that well, though. Not enough.
God.
Shall we move on to the final one?
Yeah.
Yes, for 1 point. Speak
for
stinks.
1 point, trash. This time, and only this time, which would finally score points?
Wimp.
Yes.
Is it the Witchwood?
No.
I just thought, you were being cryptic there. Is it something which?
Which would score? Wow. Is it? The Baron's Mount is the thing that he can't get, but that couldn't be a weapon.
No.
I think you've
stumped right. us. Well, it's Roch Dalar.
Oh, of course.
Roch Dalar is a living bow weapon. It's over 10,000 years old. It was only available in Classic, although when WoW Classic comes out, you might be able to get it then. When you could get it, you had to tell your friends to leave you alone. A leaf was the quest item that started it, and it was a solo quest that you could only do as a hunter. It is the legendary weapon for hunters in Hearthstone, and which always said Roch Dalar. So he would have finally scored points.
He would have got it on there because he would have said that right from the start because it's the only thing he ever said.
Is that the hunter weapon that ended up having to run around Silithus to get it?
Yeah.
Oh, God, I helped him get it.
Well, you should have known.
I kept all the mobs off him while he did whatever he had to do.
I feel like last time too. If this is the last Wiki Super Challenge ever, I feel like it ended on the right note.
Do you know I've still got a page with about 10 that we didn't do?
Wow,
nice.
Might have to introduce them every now and then for the pre-show.
Pop one on.
There you go.
Maybe I did. Love who knows?
Maybe you could play it without chat room.
Maybe.
There you go.
Mm.
They're probably way more knowledgeable than us.
There's no doubt.
This segment of Yearly Maintenance is being recorded on May 22nd of 2018. With me right now is Ryan McCone, the co-host of the Blizzard Umbrella podcast and the host of the Raiders Confessional. Ryan, we just got done talking a little bit about both those shows, and we didn't really take too much time to talk about Uldir, the first raid that people are going to get to experience in Battle for Azeroth. There have been a lot of comments made about like how long progression should take, especially at heroic and mythic level, the world first race sometimes being way too short, sometimes being a bit too long especially on those latter bosses. I want a prediction from you. How long will it take for a guild to get the world first mythic clear of Uldir from the first day that they're able to enter it?
I have my desires, but I'm going to predict 3 days.
3 days always, for a full clear. Wow.
Yep. It's a balancing act, and Blizzard always does a juggle. They go really easy the first hand. The second tier is usually really tough, and then the last couple of tiers is when they kind of find their happy ground. So I'm guessing it's going to go pretty quick.
All right, so Gahoon is sounding a little bit like chopped liver as far as you're concerned. Okay. Next prediction from you. BlizzCon, of course, being a big thing as it always is. Interesting year for BlizzCon because it's not like we're going to have a big expansion announcement for Warcraft. That's already been done. Overwatch is, you know, well into its life. I'm sure we'll get Hearthstone expansion announcement. Then there's announcements for the other franchises, but it doesn't feel like any one franchise is going to dominate more than the other, at least from where I'm sitting. Which franchise do you think is going to get the biggest news or the biggest pop at BlizzCon this year?
I think the Secret Team, the IP we have yet to hear announced.
You think this is the year that we get that IP announcement?
I do. I think it's, if they wait any longer, they may miss the boat. I feel like it's going to be a mobile platform of some sort. And I think this is the year.
All right. So mobile game, there have been rumors tossed around about it. Is this mobile game for an entirely new IP, or is this a mobile like a mobile Warcraft game, a mobile Overwatch game? What are you thinking then?
Oh, we're going deep in the rabbit hole, aren't we?
Mobile Diablo.
That would be ideal, right? And a lot of people want for it. I would love to see a new edition of Diablo come out. I think it's going to be an entirely new IP. I think it's going to be, it'll probably be a lot like Hearthstone, where it brings in little bits and pieces of the other IPs out there, but I think it'll be something new.
All right. Well, we know that there's a lot of top men and top women working on this thing. There have been people pulled from a variety of different franchises to work on this project. And hey, if this is the year for the big reveal, I'm all for it, because I know I'm going to be at BlizzCon this year. I don't know about other years. I'm never too sure about other years, but I know I'll be there this year, so I wouldn't mind getting to test that new IP out. Yeah, last prediction question for you. Final boss of Battle for Azeroth. It's an easy layup question, but I feel like I have to ask anyone who covers a World of Warcraft podcast this one. Who do you think it's going to be?
An old god of some sort. You know, I don't know which one, but yeah.
So you're not sure if it's going to be N'Zoth or Yogg-Saron 2 or C'Thun 2?
I don't think it'll be. My prediction is N'Zoth. I don't think it'll be Yogg-Saron or C'Thun. I don't think they'll bring them back. I mean, it wouldn't be out of the realm of what they've done before. We saw Gul'dan how many times? But yeah, no, I think
Olduwar was merely a setback.
Right. Yeah, I guess that's true. So I think it'll be N'Zoth if I had to pick one specific old god.
All right. Well, moving into our podcast questions, which I'm asking the same questions for everyone in Yearly Maintenance. First question for you for these ones is, what is the first podcast you ever listened to, Blizzard related or otherwise?
The first podcast I listened to, it was before they had iTunes and that kind of stuff. It was a download off a website, and it was one of Method's Hunters talking about a world first kill.
Really?
Yep.
But wait, before iTunes? Method's been around that long?
Before a lot of podcasts were on iTunes. It was okay. Yeah.
Holy cow. Yeah. That's... I had no idea.
Yep. I was bored one day in an office, and I was playing a hunter, and I was I just searched hunter, you know, just something hunter or other, and that podcast came up, so I downloaded and listened to it.
Interesting. Yeah. Man, now I want to find this thing and see what it was all about. There are so many podcasts that have covered Warcraft over the past dozen years. It's mind-blowing how many podcasts have come and gone, and just there aren't too many that are around now that can say that they were around from the beginning of World of Warcraft. I can probably count them on two hands.
Yeah, I'm one of those people, so.
Yeah. Next question. Besides podcasts that you are involved in, what podcast would you recommend to my listeners? And the recommendation, again, does not have to be a Blizzard podcast.
I'm going to stick to Blizzard. That's kind of what got me into the scene.
Sure.
And it would be unfair to not pay homage to the Instance or Battle.net News. Those guys have been around forever and doing great jobs. When I first started getting the bug to start searching for a podcast, I was really listening to those guys a lot. I still listen to them each and every single week. And obviously the Realm stuff, you know, it's nice to, I have a lot of weeks where I'll listen to all my podcasts and I need something else new to listen to. So I usually throw yours in and be like, okay, this one sounds interesting, and I'll pull it up and just start giving it a listen. So those would be my big three. If you're first starting to get into podcasting, especially with Blizzard stuff, listen to those three.
All right, the check is in the mail. Last question for you. What is your favorite memory from all of the time that you have spent being a podcaster and content creator?
Favorite memory? You know, honestly, and it was really kind of getting the Raiders Confessional up and going with season two. It was a ragtag put together of each and every week for a show. And with season two, I had finally gotten my feet underneath me and gotten a really good handle on things. And it really felt like the intro was completely my idea. And it really came to life with the help of Tom and his creative company. And the outro, same thing, and the content. And it really felt like all the pieces were finally in place. So the first episode of season two was probably my favorite memory so far to speak.
This episode of Yearly Maintenance is being recorded on July 4th of 2018. With me right now is one part of the team behind the Lost Codex and the host of the Decoded podcast, Jesse. We have a few predictions that I would love for you to make, especially considering how much you are into the lore of World of Warcraft. And I know how excited you are about burning a Total Soul. By the way, while we were relatively spoiler-free in our main recording for the show, if you want to spoil anything about spoilers and stuff that you know right now, feel free. All bets are off, because by the end of the year, most of this stuff people know. So
perfect. I'm so
you are excited. Unleashed.
Here we go. Oh, man. Those are dangerous words. Those are dangerous words.
Well, let's start off with this major prediction, and it's something that's intrigued me a bit, because I wonder if something's going to happen before Battle for Azeroth launches in this regard. Jesse, do you feel any major characters are going to die by the end of 2018, and if so, which ones?
Ooh, okay. I'm expecting a big loss. But I'm so conflicted as to who, because there's certain characters we haven't seen, and Blizzard, they've said that they're being sneaky, that there's things that we're not seeing in the data mines, there's things that we're not seeing, or so they claim. So, you know, I'm really curious where we don't see Malfurion after the burning of Teldrassil. And we know, according to the data mines, that data mine text, that he apparently leaves with Tyrande, but there's a cinematic that we don't know about, and
it looks like he's spared, and they have broadcast text and stuff in there to show that he's given the opportunity to be spared and stuff. And I really feel like they're doing a misdirect here, and I actually think that Malfurion's going to die.
I agree, and I honestly think, because I think Tyrande and him hearth, and to me that's bizarre. You know, Sarfang spares Malfurion.
But someone else gets him. Like, what if Sylvanas just decides, well, if you're not going to get him, I'm going to take this job?
Well, I think in that scene, Sylvanas leaves, and it's just Sarfang, Tyrande, and Malfurion, and basically Sarfang says, you need to leave, and they right. hearth. I think it says they hearth the Stormwind, which is so bizarre. So I'm thinking, in the cinematic, in the actual Teldrassil cinematic, Malfurion's going to say, oh, hell no, I'm not hearthing, and it goes back to Teldrassil, maybe mm-hmm. without Tyrande, and in some heroic sacrifice, or something. Maybe Sylvanas is the one to kill him. I think Malfurion's going to die. I'm also betting that Varisa isn't long for this world. I'm betting we saw with the Three Sisters cinematic, or Three Sisters comic rather, that the Void does not like Sylvanas at all. And Sylvanas had some pretty dark intentions at the end of that comic. And I don't see Illyria being killed off right away. Sylvanas, whole nother story later on in the expansion, right. But Varisa, that is that final strand between Illyria and Sylvanas that needs to be broken. Either Varisa's going, or, and I, this is a prediction I kind of made a little while back.
And it's, what if Varisa's kids get split and one goes Horde and one goes Alliance?
Ooh, that's interesting. That'd be actually kind of cool to see, you know. I've never thought about that. Or aside, I was thinking, like, what if one of her kids dies and that prompts Varisa to go psycho, which prompts her getting killed.
Right.
But in the audio drama, Illyria has a vision of Erator, and Erator is fighting against her, or is against her in some sort of way. And he's screaming a battle cry when arrows pierce his throat, black arrows. And Illyria is like, oh my God, I'm going to be the one to kill him. And I thought, what if those aren't her arrows? What if those are Sylvanas's arrows? What if and she said that Arator is the only, not even Tyrallian, Arator is the one anchor that is keeping her here.
And if she loses Arator
to her sister, oh my God, that is that not only is that anchor dropping, that anchor is it explodes.
And Sylvanas, considering the Void has all this enmity towards Sylvanas already.
And so that would be the perfect time for the Void to look at Illyria and go, we told you. You know, yep. At the end of the comic, when she hugs Tyrallian and Arator, they say, you've done it. You screwed up. This is it. You're going to pay for this. And what if Sylvanas is the one to kill Arator? That is going to be one hell of a doozy. Aside from Arator, I believe Arator, I don't know if it's this expansion, but maybe later on. Yep. Varisa, I'm not so sure about. Malfurion, I don't want Malfurion to die. I want to see angry alliance roaring Malfurion, because he is easily the most powerful racial leader of Horde and Alliance, but we've never seen that. He's always the best damsel. He's never the best at what he does. And I want to see Malfurion.
I understand what you're saying, but I almost want Malfurion to die because I want to see the warrior priestess that Tyrande was back in the Warcraft 3 RTS. And I feel like she has been so tame in World of Warcraft, losing her husband would put the fire back in her.
I got the biggest smirk on my face and I'm nodding because I agree. We've not seen that savage, wild Tyrande. You know, Grom Hellscream says in Warcraft 3, he gets excited. Oh, hang on.
Sorry
about that. I'll restart that sentence. Sure. In Warcraft 3, Grom Hellscream gets so excited. Maybe excited is not the right word, but he acknowledges how badass the Night Elf Sentinels are. Grom was always one to acknowledge his enemies when they're, you know, when they're great warriors. Mm-hmm. And he even says, like, these elves are great warriors. He even says that, if I recall correctly. So I want to see that brought back. I don't want to, you know, Night Elves are given this sort of hippie, druidic. Tyrande has been so calm, and the priest, you know, everyone, Priestess of Illyria is supposed to be peaceful. It's like, no, Tyrande in Warcraft 3 was a BAMF. She was awesome, and I want to see that.
The whole thing about Night Elves in the RTS was that these weren't your typical high fantasy elves. These Night Elves were supposed to break that mold.
And I feel that after Warcraft 3, they fell into the Alliance, because the Alliance was missing that sort of high elven thing, which the high elves filled, but the high elves didn't have a role in vanilla WoW, so it was lost. And I felt that Metzen's original vision for Night Elves was just kind of consumed with the whole Alliance is good, golden, proper, while the Horde is bad and savage and stuff like that. So I would love, if in order to see Tyrande come out like that, if Malfurion has to die, well, so be it. See ya, Furion.
All right, well, this might be somewhat tied then to what we just talked about, because we did talk about, like, possibly Malfurion's death. But, of course, one of the few things left from the Battle for Lordaeron, Burning for Teldrassil, is there's definitely, it's been pointed out by Taryn Gregory and others, a missing cinematic, or maybe more than one, that people have yet to experience during the testing of this pre-patch content. What do you think this missing cinematic shows us? I think one of the biggest things it shows us, in my opinion, is that it was not the Horde responsible for starting the burning of Teldrassil. That happened from either the Alliance or a third party.
That's interesting. And I've been fighting with myself about this, because the data mine text suggests that Sylvanas didn't want to burn Teldrassil. She wanted to take Teldrassil. She wanted to keep everyone prisoner. She was going to publicly execute Malfurion, which there's nothing morally gray about that. That is flat out villainhood right there. But she says, we will basically keep Darnassus as hostages and we'll have years of peace. And it's like, okay, that's not a perfect plan at all. And then something happens and Teldrassil goes up in flames. And she makes a comment that's a surprise to her. So I think you're right. There's something, and I said this on last week's podcast, and I don't think this is true, but I entertain the idea. What if our artifacts explode and cause the tree to go up in fire? What if it's a situation like
they
that?
They are pretty erratic right now.
They're unstable. And Magni says, like, power like that comes at a price. What if that price is Teldrassil? And I don't think that's true because that puts too much focus on which faction has which artifact, which is a problematic issue that Blizzard has kind of avoided for the longest
time. Well, it could happen from multiple artifacts wielded by both factions. Well, one thing I did notice was that your artifact retirement cutscenes, when you go to drain the power from the Sword of Sargeras, the other characters that are present with you are from your faction. So they do kind of faction separate it between which classes are holding the weapons for the Horde and which ones are holding them for the Alliance. So I actually think there's a bit of separation there already.
And I found that interesting, if not a tiny little bit strange, because certain characters have certain weapons that, so like they give Liadrin the Ashbringer. They don't give,
right.
They don't give Maxwell Tyrosus one of, you know, he was literally friends with Uther and Tyrion. They don't give him the Ashbringer. He was friends with, you know, Mograin. They give Liadrin. They give an orc warlock the Scepter of Sargeras. That didn't go well the first time. Why would you give it to... I love Riddison, but why would you do that?
Hey, in my head canon, my warlock had the Scepter of Sargeras.
Well, exactly. And that's the issue, is we only see one weapon. We don't see who has the Paladin or the Holy Paladin. It's only one weapon for everyone. So, like, the Paladin
right.
weapon, if you're not a Paladin, is represented by the Ashbringer and Liadrin. And I honestly think...
You don't know about the fate of the other Paladin artifacts and stuff, right?
That's it. And I honestly don't think there's any sort of lore relevancy to that particular cutscene in terms of who's holding what weapon. Rhaegar is holding...
Has Doomhammer.
Which doesn't make any sense because literally his weapon from Heroes is... a artifact skin for elemental shamans.
Yep.
So I'm sitting here going, why? So I think it's honestly just to show a familiar face. In the same way that in the 7.2 cinematic, when they're having a meeting and Kil'jaeden's spying on them, we see all the leaders of the class hall standing there. That's not players.
Right.
That's just Blizzard's way of NPC identifying who represents each class hall. I don't think that that holds any water in terms of who has... which artifact, which is why my theory on the artifacts blowing up Teldrassil, as cool as it is, I don't think that's true. And I'm really curious about this third party storyline because nothing in Battle for Azeroth suggests that there was a third party at all. There's no hints or, you know, at least with Legion, there was the whispers and rumors of what happened with the Horde. Why did the Horde leave? And, you know, Before the Storm has Anduin questioning all this. And there was a sort of seed of doubt. We don't see any of that in Battle for Azeroth. It's just the Horde burns Teldrassil and Anduin is like, we are taking. And part of me wonders if there's something that comes after the burning of Teldrassil, because what's interesting is when you queue up for the Battle for Lordaeron, Sylvanas says... Or Anduin says that we didn't give any time for Sylvanas to prepare. And Sylvanas says, Bryl's already fallen. And to me, it's like, okay, how do you get an entire fleet north, land in Tirith's Fall, and storm your way halfway through the zone before the Horde soldiers who have access to instant teleportation can do anything? And so I'm wondering, is there a week, because everything's going to be really fast. We're only going to have the Battle of Lordaeron a week before the expansion goes live, or so they said in some recent interview. So I'm wondering, is there a missing landfall scene? Because we have all the world quests leading up to the burning of Teldrassil with Ashen Veil, but they've never said anything about world quests for Battle for Lordaeron. So I'm wondering, is there a missing... We've got the Ashen Veil War March 1 week, burning of Teldrassil at the end, and is there a War March leading from the burning of Teldrassil to the Battle for Lordaeron? Is that the missing unknown part? That's what I'm curious, because we go from this... The Horde literally marches through Ashen Veil, burning everything in their path, executing civilians, stuff like this, or so the data mine desk text suggests. Blizzard said that there's world quests, there's gear catch-up, all this stuff. But then suddenly we go from the burning of Teldrassil scenario right to the Battle for Lordaeron? What's the in-between?
It feels like there should be some connective tissue.
And I'm wondering if there's something, whether that's that third-party issue, whether there's something there, and I'm really curious what we're missing. Taryn said that on stage at E3, that there's things that they're doing that they've never done before.
Which is like,
he said that and I was like, oh, you bastard. Why would you say that? Now the whole community's thinking he said it with the biggest.
And it makes you wonder, what have they not done before?
Because, you know, Blizzard loves to revisit things that have worked. But, like, to go out of your way and say, we're doing things we've never done before, it's like, ooh, now you
have. And I feel like, I feel like that never done before is put in narrative content straight into the game without letting it be data mined. I kind of feel like that's amazing. The gist of it.
That would be amazing, especially with, you know, how they're approaching the writing and with Christy Golden working directly. And one of the things I'm so excited about with Before the Storm and Christy Golden being at Blizzard is there's going to be a connection. She's going to make sure that things that happen in the book happen properly in the game. Mm-hmm. If you didn't read War Crimes, you have no idea what the hell happens in Warlords. You know, seeing Kairos's body there means you're like, you don't understand what happens with the short story and with Kairos escaping. All this stuff doesn't make any sense. But I think with Christy, and that's just because there was a disconnect between the book and the game development. But with Christy heavily involved with Team 2 now, I hope, I pray, and I really think that everything's going to be directly connected, that there's things that have been given to us that we have, that we're just not even thinking about right now. That's going to be bam, right there in game. That's just as a result of Christy being directly involved with the game now. So I'm really excited. I think you're right in that this missing, mysterious Terran stir in the pot right now, I think that is things that get launched that we've never seen. And an example of that is the sword. You know, we knew we would be draining the sword. No one knew that it was going to give us max artifact level. We all thought that when we drained it, we were going to give up our weapons right away because the text said it was unstable. No one saw, I don't recall it being anywhere in the data mine that we got instant artifact cap instantly.
I can say Peculia from Wowhead was genuinely surprised.
She was. And I remember seeing the Wowhead post and I was like, what? I remember thinking early on, because there was the leaked cinematics months ago, or not leaked, but data mined, where you do see raising of the weapon, and then we saw like the funky spell effect that was going in on our weapons, but we all thought that the number was going down. No one knew the number was going up. So I'm wondering, what else does Blizzard have hidden up their sleeve?
Yeah, it's interesting. We will definitely see. And by now, of course, that stuff has happened when people are listening to this. Another thing that's likely happened by the time people are listening to this is the launch of patch 8.1. If they follow their release schedule similar to what they did with Legion, I think there will be an 8.1 patch before the end of the year. My question to you is, what do you think patch 8.1 will focus on?
So Blizzard said that 7.1 came a little bit too early in Legion, and I disagree. I think it was a fair release of content, because 7.1 had some raid content and stuff like that, so I think it was okay of them to release. I definitely think that BlizzCon will either, it'll happen right after BlizzCon, or it'll happen just before BlizzCon, and that at BlizzCon will be the focus, kind of like Legion with 8.2, 8.3, stuff like that.
Right.
So I think that I don't believe 8.1 is going to be anything to do with Azshara, because I think she's the Gul'dan.
I think Azshara is an 8.2 thing.
Same. They said she's the Gul'dan of the expansion, which means that she should come out in before 8.2, before the Tomb of Sargeras version. I don't think so. I think that she's going to be that her and her raid, because right now she has such little story. And this is, remember, we're recording this before the expansion's out, so there's things out there. But Azshara, we know she pops up in Kul Tiras. We know she pops up here and there, but not enough that it's warrants her as a raid boss. And I really hope that they don't just kill her off in a raid with almost no story introduction at all. Even though she's been around forever, I really want to see an entire zone, Nazjatar, cough, cough, there was a data mine of a map called Nazjatar. I really hope that that's an entire zone we go to in 8.2. As for
when they say Azshara is the Gul'dan of Battle for Azeroth, what if they also mean she's the Gul'dan of Battle for Azeroth in the way that Gul'dan was present in Warlords of Draenor? In other words, what if she's a main antagonist, but we don't actually get to truly defeat her until the next expansion?
I would love that, because I think Azshara needs her own expansion.
She needs a lot. We need to know. I mean, like, we know a lot about her past from, like, hundreds, thousands of years ago, but it'd be great to see more than just one patch worth of who Azshara is now.
Right. And I remember seeing a comment that, you know, they felt that Gul'dan was kind of shafted because all through the 7.0 content, we didn't really see him. We saw him in pockets, but it was kind of like, I would agree with that, except that we saw him all through Warlords. He at least was background villaining all through Warlords and then through the entire leveling process of Legion and then poof, Nighthold, whatever. So I would love if Azshara avoids us the entire expansion. You know, maybe she is the final boss. I was really banking on Kil'jaeden surviving the tomb. I did not think they were going to officially kill off Kil'jaeden before Argus. And they did. But I really would love for a raid boss to survive, to escape, and not in the typical dungeon, wahaha, you next time heroes, you can get me, and he escapes. I want a raid boss to escape in a cinematic and leave the fate of them unknown. Just like in the Warlord's Hellfire cinematic with Gul'dan being thrown through, you were kind of like, damn it. He got away. I was so ready to kill Gul'dan right then and there, and he gets away, and then he...
We could take Ezshara down to 1%, and then N'Zoth manifests itself, and then a shadowy portal swallows up Ezshara and says, not yet, or something.
Not yet. Who knows? I would love that, and I think Ezshara deserves her own focus. I think, to answer your original question, 8.1, allied race, they really want to introduce an allied race, and I honestly believe, and I could be very careful because I don't want to, not that I don't want to spoil, it's that I don't want to go off for an hour on this topic, because I can. Before the Storm has huge, absolutely mind-blowing potential for the future. There is things that happen in there that is setting up the future of Azeroth for the long run. And I am talking specifically about Sylvanas and Kalia Menethil. And Kalia Menethil, her entire storyline with this, with, you know, Alanza's Fall, my favorite character, recent newly returned character to date. And then she dies at the end in a very stupid move that she makes on her own, and she admits that after. And then she's resurrected. And she says to Anduin, I'm not ready to lead yet. And I'm sitting here going, that's it. I have, and I say this, people who've listened to my podcast know that I have advocated for Kalia Menethil to lead the Forsaken for years. But the one question my friend Jack and I kept coming to was, how can Kalia Menethil, who was missing until Legion, how can the Kalia Menethil lead the Forsaken if she's alive? That was the one question. How can she lead them if she's living? And Before the Storm covers that. She, as the living Queen of Lordaeron, because she's acknowledged as the Queen of Lordaeron, she tries to help the Forsaken, and she's killed for it. Sylvanas does the worst possible thing she can do, and not only kills her own, not only kills those deserting the Horde and the Forsaken, but also those who are running back towards her, but she also kills Kalia and turns Kalia into the one thing that Kalia did not need to be, a martyr. A martyr who's undead. And I think Christy Golden is waiting until 8.1 before Kalia Menethil gets introduced into the game. And that is a storyline. Sylvanas, as much as, you know, people say they don't want a Garrosh 2.0 where we take out the Warchief, there is no way you could have expected Sylvanas to take over the Horde and us not to take her out eventually. And unlike Garrosh, who's going to bring the whole, who brought the whole world to him, I think this is going to be a little bit different. And I honestly believe Battle for Azeroth will end with Kalia Menethil in some way challenging, if not taking complete control of the Forsaken, because as we know, Sylvanas sees the Forsaken as arrows in her quiver, and she kills. She said at the beginning of the book, she would rather deter Forsaken than destroy them. And at the end of the book, she destroys deserters and loyalists alike. That is huge. Not only with the light resurrecting an undead, but with Kalia Menethil now being undead, Christy Golden is laying the stepping stones for a new Forsaken leader. And I think 8.0 will cover that.
Here's the thing. What if, the closest antonym that I could think of to Forsaken is retained. So just how the light retained Kalia Menethil from not leaving existence. What if you have the retained, as it were, as a new undead class, and you have essentially alliance undead versus Horde undead?
I would, and there's a leak on MMO Champion that talks about the redeemed, very close.
Redeemed, okay.
That's interesting because Uther's tomb on the beta has been given entirely, not only just like garrison updates with like the new architecture, but it's
Runes of Light and all that. Yeah.
It's an entire, there's a new stained glass, an entire custom statue of him. And why would Blizzard update Uther's tomb? We go to Uther's tomb in Legion as a paladin. So why wouldn't they update it then? Why are they updating it now? And according to this leak, I don't think there's any truth to this, but they're going to resurrect Uther as a redeemed assistant for Kalia. Kalia, the queen, the competing queen of Lordaeron, is going to have Alanza's Fall on one side
So Uther would be kind of like basically Kalia's Nathanos in a way.
Exactly. Or the Gen Greymane to Anduin. She's going to have her, and it's interesting because both are wielders of the light, and so is she. And that's what's interesting. Part of me doesn't want an allied race for the Redeemed, for Forsaken, because that would mean Kalia leads them, or maybe Uther would. But I want Kalia to lead the Forsaken. I say this as someone who's loved Sylvanas for so long. Kalia is the leader the Forsaken need, and I'm not sure how they could have Kalia Menethil lead an alliance allied race faction and then eventually the Horde faction. It could be sort of like the Void Elves. You know, the Void Elves' racial leader isn't Illyria. It's Magister Umbrick, but Illyria is the face of the Void Elves. So maybe Uther becomes the leader of the Redeemed, and Kalia is just the face, but Kalia eventually joins and leads the Horde Forsaken. And that brings into the whole question, which, you know, there's no time for this right now, but will there be factions after the 8.0 expansion, after Battle for Azeroth? Will
a lot of content creators have been asking that question.
And honestly, with Kalia leading the Forsaken, as we talked about in the podcast, Bane and Anduin, they've got a great friendship, and Kalia leading the Forsaken is that piece that everyone needs. So yeah. I think that if that happens, faction, because it's hard to put Kalia in a faction conflict. Why would Kalia lead the Forsaken but suddenly turn against Anduin and all that? It doesn't make any sense.
She wouldn't.
She'd be Sylvanas 2.0, right? So
yeah.
I wonder what the future of the Forsaken means, and I think 8.1 is going to start that cookie trail quest line, I think.
I definitely hope you're right there. Before the Storm made me so hungry for more of what's happening with that plot line. I mean, I know there's a whole lot going on with Kul Tiras and Jaina and her mother, and then you have Zandalar and the troll empires and Vol'jin spirit and stuff like that. But Before the Storm has me so interested in the fate of the Forsaken right now, it's nuts.
Same.
Last prediction question really quick. Even though it probably won't be revealed by the end of the year, it's fun to speculate this anyhow. Final boss of Battle for Azeroth, is it N'Zoth? And if not, who is it?
Okay. Blizzard is totally insisting that this is a faction expansion.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with old gods at all. Nope.
Nothing. Totally not. You know, definitely no Cultus and Culturas. Definitely no old god prison beneath Zandalar. That's crazy. Part of me doesn't want N'Zoth to be the final boss because I'm still banking on that Azshara expansion. If we get an entire patch of Azshara with an entire zone and storyline, I might be content with that. But what's interesting is if you look on the map where N'Zoth's prison is supposed to be.
Nyalotha?
Well, we don't know if he's in Nyalotha. We know that's a place he's connected to, but specifically his prison on the Chronicle map. It's in the middle of the ocean right now, as we are right now. And what's interesting is the Broken Isles is right between Zandalar and Kul Tiras. It's actually so close to Kul Tiras.
Yeah.
And what I found interesting about the Tomb of Sargeras was the bottom part of the Tomb of Sargeras was the Titan facility. And as we know in Ulduar, not only was the raid huge and beautiful, but Ulduar's entire complex stretched far beneath Storm Peaks. We know Titan facilities are not small by any means. They go for miles. And my question was, that I asked when Tomb came out, was why did the Night Elves apparently found the pillars? Or the Night Elves built Temple of Alun on top of this facility they found. But when you walk into the Tomb of Sargeras, it's a Night Elf temple, and you see the pillars of creation up in the stained glass. And I thought, why are there pillars of creation in stained glass in a temple dedicated to Alun? And I thought, what if they found the artifacts, the Pillars of Creation, in this facility underground, and they brought them up and they revered them and stuff like this? What if that facility was connected to N'Zoth's prison? What if it's part of the Ulduar complex, and I say Ulduar complex as just a name holder, for the complex that was built to hold N'Zoth? Because it's close, it's in the ocean, it's nearby, and we only visit a single part of the Tomb of Sargeras. Why was there a Titan complex down there? You know, Eowyn puts the Avatar Sargeras down there, but that's not the reason it was made. It was made long before that. Why?
Right.
Why was that complex made? And was that where they found the pillars. And that goes back to the Whispers of Ilganoth. Five keys to you know, five torches to light the way. Pillars of Creation. So I wonder, is there a connection there? Part of me wants to say N'Zoth is the last boss because it's all connected. It's all in the same vicinity. I really want Blizzard to throw us a curveball. They threw us a curveball with Legion. I did not expect Argus itself to be the last boss. So I'm wondering if there's, you know, a lot of people have talked about, is there going to be a faction last boss where we take out someone? And I honestly think Sylvanas is not surviving this expansion. But
what that if would, Yen is the Horde's final boss and Sylvanas is the Sylvanas is the Alliance's final boss?
I've been wondering who could the Alliance villain be. And we saw in the book, Christy Golden's book, that Gen Greymane changes his mind about Forsaken. Even Gen friggin' Greymane, who hates anything that rhymes with the word dead, changes his mind. And so I'm wondering,
I feel like Turalyon, I feel like, could be a possible final boss, just because another problem with Gen is, I mean, Gen's a cool character and all, but Sylvanas comes across as this, especially due to her nature and her history, as a powerful figure. Gen is a worgen and a king, but it's not like Gen is really super powered or anything.
Right, he couldn't fight a raid of people.
Right, Turalyon, on the other hand, is a being empowered by the light. And I could almost see Turalyon being a possible defender of the Alliance and a final boss.
I'm wondering, I think Turalyon's story is going to be very minimal in Battle for Azeroth. He's not even at the Battle for Lordaeron, as far as we know. You know, he comes from Lordaeron, and he doesn't go to the Battle for... Why? Why is he not there?
That's a good point.
I don't think that... Unless he dies in the pre-patch, which I doubt. I highly doubt they're going to introduce him after so long and kill him literally months later. I think Turalyon's story is next in 9.0. Okay. But it's just that question of who would the Alliance won't be. And if they make it so the Horde take out Sylvanas too, that's just another Garrosh. And Blizzard does not want to do another Garrosh. And I don't think it's right for them to do it. So I'm trying to, Jaina, it's hard. Jaina would make a great final boss, but it's hard to compare her to Sylvanas. People say that she's just as much a monster as Sylvanas. And I'm sitting here going, right, because, you know, Sylvanas has, or Jaina has nuked Horde villages several times, right?
It's a fair point.
War crimes or Tides of War, she almost destroys Orgrimmar. Fine, she gets angry. But if you were to compare war crimes committed by Jaina and war crimes committed by Sylvanas, Sylvanas is top of the boards right there. Yeah. And it's kind of like, who could the Alliance one be? And I'm really struggling, unless that Alliance boss does things throughout the expansion that we haven't seen yet. Maybe it is Tyrande. Maybe Malfurion dies and Tyrande suddenly becomes this crazy, you know, she, not only does she become a crazy badass, but she becomes takes the full Alliance morality grayness and just colors it black and she starts executing everybody. That would be different, but I'm really struggling with an answer there because I want to say N'Zoth, but I want to say Blizzard has something up their sleeve as much as they're trying
to. I feel like N'Zoth is too soon. I mean, everyone's I feel like everyone's saying like, oh, well, it's Horde and Alliance, but it's just a mask for N'Zoth being the final boss. And it's like, I would say, yeah, that's how WoW worked in the past. I don't think that's how it's going to work now.
I'm inclined to agree because I don't think... but at the same time, Blizzard, in a recent interview, did say there are things going on in the background that might impact the... See, I'm a little bit all over the board here, and I'm really not sure who this last boss is going to be. I think by the time this goes live at the end of the year, we're going to find out at BlizzCon. We're going to get an idea at BlizzCon. I don't think it'll be fully confirmed, but I think we'll have an idea. And because right now we don't even know anything that's happening beyond the end game of 8.0. There's things we don't even know happening at the end of 8.0 yet because they haven't been data mined. So I'm excited, but I don't know. N'Zoth, I want to say N'Zoth or Azjara or something.
N'Zoth and Azjara are the easiest answers. I'm hoping the answer's not that easy.
Same. I agree. And there maybe the final boss is Azeroth herself. Maybe she
What if Azeroth is just too corrupted?
Which is bad news for us. But maybe we have to... It's kind of like the Dreamwalker fight in Icecrown. We have to heal her in some sort of way. And we fight her, but she's not exactly Argus corrupted, but she's still... She's kind of like a writhing baby, and she doesn't really know how to respond to us.
Yeah.
So at that you've stumped me. I have all these answers and I've got 10 page essays for each one, but I don't have a solid answer. And I'm going to listen it's back fine. To this in December and I'm going to go, damn it, why didn't I say this person? That is clearly the right answer. But right now in July 4th, Jesse is unsure.
It's quite all right. A few final questions, and these more lean away from WoW and just more about just learning a little bit more about you as a content creator and as a podcaster. I'm not sure how frequently you've listened to podcasts in the past, but and whether this is World of Warcraft or Blizzard related or not, what is the very first podcast you remember listening to?
Very first podcast I remember, it has to be either Blizzard Watches or back in the day, WoW Insiders podcast, mm-hmm. or The Instance, one of the two. Okay. And I want to say one of them led me to the other, and I can't remember. Okay. I'm kicking myself right now. I can't remember which one. One of those. I'm going to give both as an answer. The Instance and before it was known as the Blizzard Watch one.
Right.
I'm drawing
WoW Insider.
Yeah.
All right. And next question, besides content that you create, is there a podcast or we'll even say a content creator because you do a lot of YouTube content out there as well. Is there a podcast or a content creator that you would recommend to people looking for something to add to their feed?
I got a few. Okay. Very quickly, I'll list them off. I've had the privilege of being on the Merely a Setback podcast. Super fun to talk with those guys because, again, just so much to talk about with lore and back and forth and head cannons and all the stuff. So those guys are great to listen to, especially when you want to listen to lore and you just mm-hmm. want to hear a bunch of dudes and ladies just gush about the lore. That is a great place. So I recommend Merely a Setback. Lagging Balls is a fun podcast.
Yes, it is.
Both Thist and Thorn are great hosts. And, you know, it's just one of those podcasts that's perfect because they cover the news in a week. They talk about funny things that happen in the week, personal stories, gaming, all this stuff. And it's just one of those ones that you can really relax and listen to at work, on your way home, something like that. So I really recommend go take a listen to Thist and Thorn on Lagging Balls. I'm trying to think of really fast off my head. There's another podcast out there, and they're up and coming. They just started. They're buddies of mine, and they're called The Daily Grind. And they're all about just the everyday daily grind in real life, in gaming, in fitness. They're especially focused on the fitness and gaming balance. And they're 2 to 3 buddies of mine who started this not too long ago, and they're brand new to podcasts. So they're kind of, they're rocking in their boat all crazy and disoriented, but it's been really fun because they, you know, their original, their original brand name was called Amateur Hour. And their whole motto was, you know, we're not experts in everything. We're amateurs at everything. And it's just kind of fun to listen to a bunch of dudes who really don't know what they're doing, do what they do. And I've been on a fitness journey with them for the last year. And the dedication that those guys have to their passion is really admirable. So listening to the story and how much weight they lost and the transformation physically and who they've come around as gamers is really a inspirational. It's really goofy because they do it live, and some of them are really strong speakers and the other ones are just goofs and dinks. And it's funny to listen to them because it's unscripted and it's just, I want to say it's a shit show in the funniest way possible, but really it's got a good message because it's about that everyday grind, whether you're grinding out your mage towers, which are now, you know, gone from the game when you listen to
right.
this, whether you're grinding out, you're going for your walk in your evening or your fitness, your diet, whatever it is, they talk about it. And they really just want people to start this, any sort of change, whether it's dedicate themselves to something, put your nose to the grindstone and just do it. You know, as Shia LaBeouf says, just do it. And I think it's really admirable that they started this podcast. And as of recording this right now in July, they have only a couple episodes in, but hopefully by the time this goes live, whenever this goes live, months from now, they're, you know, hopefully episode well into the 20s. And I really hope they stick with it because right now it's really good to see something that different, fitness, gaming, and the balance between come out. So if you guys get a chance, check out The Daily Grind. Those guys are new and they could use all the encouragement because you know what? They're just fun to listen to.
Awesome. Final question for you. And you're going to have so much potential stuff that you can go to from here. This may give you may need a minute to figure this one out.
All right.
What is your favorite memory from the time that you have been into not just podcasting, but with everything you do with the Lost Codex and your earlier work where you've talked about BlizzCon submissions and stuff in the past. What's your favorite memory from the time that you have been involved in content creation for Blizzard and World of Warcraft fan content?
Ooh, you're right. That is a hard question.
Like trying to pick your favorite kid.
Yeah. That's tough because all of my fondest memories that come to mind are BlizzCon. Everything is BlizzCon oriented because that is just a blur of nerd excitement. And I'm trying to hone in on one. I don't want to say my first BlizzCon. Not that that wasn't fun. It was amazing. I'm trying to think. You know, there's something to say about being in the audience when your video is announced. We haven't won first place for the Machinima contest, but seeing your video up on screen, that was really cool. Getting flown out to London, England by Blizzard for the Heroes of the Storm launch.
Yeah.
That was cool. Last summer, Blizzard flew me out to talk about the Lost Codex and how they can help improve our channel, which was really, really surreal to have them say, like, we like you. And unfortunately, Jeff couldn't go, but we like you and we want to help. And that to me was like, whoa. You know, being on the launcher, whoa. But I think the thing that stands out in my head the most, and maybe it's because it's the most recent, and I think it's that's the reason, but being, again, at BlizzCon last year, we were at the con before the storm party, and we had a meet and greet at 10 o'clock. And I thought, you know, we're not that big. No one's going to really care. And people came up to us. There was a line of like 9 people. It's only 9 people, but I was like, whoa, that is 9 more people than I expected. And I had people say, can I get an autograph? Can I get a picture with you? Some dude yelled across the Hilton lobby the next morning and recognized me. He's like, hey, you're Jesse from the Lost Codex. And I was like, yeah, I am. You recognize me? And it was this moment of, you know, Jeff and I kind of looking at each other going, what the hell? People are like, can I get an autograph from you guys, a picture? And we're like, why? Why do you want a picture? Yes, absolutely. But why? Like, and they're like, dude, I love your content. And I was like, okay, I believe you. Like, and you know, we didn't start the Lost Codex. I use the word famous very loosely. We didn't start it for that. We did it because we love making lore videos, but to have people run up to us and just, you know, that's originally where I met the guys from Merely a Setback, is they ran up to my table and just gushed for several minutes straight about lore. And I was so like, this is amazing. I met Jay the Bard. Everyone knows Jay the Bard is before he won the talent contest. He came up to me and said, dudes, you guys inspired me to start my Jay the Bard podcast and stuff like that. And then the dude goes on to win BlizzCon the next day. Yeah. And I was like, that's my boy. I know him. Like it was BlizzCon 2017 was such an exciting thing because I met so many amazing people. I've had people like Dave Kozak from the Hearthstone team. I said, Dave, can I give you my business card? And he's like, yeah, sure. And I pull out my business card and he grabs my card and he freaks out. He's like, wait, you're the Lost Codex? Dude, I watch your stuff all the time at work. And I was sitting there going, I'm supposed to be freaking out on you. What is this? It was so bizarre and so cool. So I honestly have to say, anytime, and it sounds really vain to say, anytime we're recognized at BlizzCon, but it's so cool because I like freaking out and geeking out with people. So to have someone freak out and geek out on me, and I get to share in that, like, oh my God, you're a fan of me, I'm instantly going to be a fan of you, is so cool and so heartwarming. That's why BlizzCon 2018 cannot come soon enough, because it is just another chance to meet fans and people who love both my content and the story that Blizzard gives us every day. So I want to say that that's the most recent thing, is Jeff and I just having people run up to us saying, man, we love your stuff, and reckoning that we had shirts made. People were pointing like, oh my God, Lost Codex shirts. And I was like, whoa, like, you know us? They're like, yeah, dude, I watch your videos all the time. I'm like, whoa, wicked. Like, and I was just stunned, and I'm still stunned thinking about it.
Yeah, I think for a lot of content creators, far too often we forget that we're almost creating this stuff in a vacuum, and we're not entirely aware of who is watching us, who is listening to us, until it's actually out there in the wild. And then we forget that it's out there in the wild and that people have seen this and heard this. So when those moments come around and you get that recognition, it's a great majority of us do not create content for the purpose of getting recognized. But when that recognition does happen, it's really a special moment.
And some memory that makes me laugh is I was on the Blizzard Watch podcast after I got to meet Anne Stickney last summer when Blizzard flew me out. Mm-hmm. They flew her out as well, and I became friends with Anne, and she's like, I'd love to have you on our podcast. So she brings me on, and I've been good this podcast. I haven't sworn very much, but when I get excited, I can get kind of foul-mouthed. And I kept forgetting that it was a PG-13 podcast. So every time I swore, Anne would mute me out with a pirate ghost sound. I guess it was like a yarr sound. I can't remember the sound. And she kept saying, there's going to be a lot of ghost pirates. Anyway, at BlizzCon, someone comes up and says, man, I loved hearing you on the Blizzard Watch podcast. There were so many ghost pirates. And like, my whole group looked at me. Jeff looked at me like, what are they talking about? And I just start laughing. I'm like, oh my God, as if you're calling me out on my swear words 4 months later. And they were laughing. I was laughing. And I was like, God, this is too funny. And all my friends were like, what does he mean? But I said, don't worry about it. Just don't worry about it. I kind of butchered their podcast by swearing too much. But it was just this kind of like ran up ghost pirates. And I was like, really? Of all the things to remember, you remember the ghost pirates? And it was really cool to talk with him. And I got a picture with him. And just as you said, we don't do it for the recognition. But when someone recognizes our name or my face, which still confuses the hell out of me, it's kind of like, whoa, this is cool. And I loved every second of it, of talking with the, you know, I not that I don't like talking. I love talking to everyone. But to have someone say, like, I love your stuff. Can I? And they almost ask for permission to talk with me. I'm like, you don't need permission. Let's just geek out. Let's just talk. And it's so cool to have these people know my content and love it as much as I love creating it.
And that sound means your update is complete, at least for today. There's more Yearly Maintenance 2018 to listen to from now through the end of the year. If this is your first time listening, you can find this podcast on most podcasting apps, including Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, TuneIn, and Spotify. Don't forget to check out realm-maintenance.com, where you can find not only the weekly podcast roundup, but a directory of most podcasts out there covering your favorite Blizzard franchises. If you're a podcaster and have news about your show or a promo to send in, or if you're just a listener with questions about Blizzard games or podcasts for those games, send those emails to realmpodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow the show on Twitter @realmpodcast, or follow myself @Rowow, spelled R-H-O-W-O-W. Once again, this episode is part of a 6-day series running from December 26th through the 31st. Make sure to listen to all 6 episodes as I revisit interviews from earlier this year, asking podcasters to try and predict 2018, along with finding out what podcasts they listen to and what their favorite moments have been as content creators. Episode 276 of the show will be here on January 1st, and I'll kick off the new year with the returning hosts of the newly rebooted Summoning Stone podcast. Until next time, I've been Ro. You've been you, and Yearly Maintenance continues. This podcast has been a presentation of Realm Maintenance Productions, copyright 2018, and is part of the Frozen Fox Media Network. You can find more great shows at frozenfoxmedia.com. Certain audio portions of this podcast belong entirely to Blizzard Entertainment, and no copyright infringement is intended. The show's theme music is a cover of Call to Arms by Emma Fox. Thanks again to everyone I have interviewed over the course of 2018. Without you guys to talk to, there'd be a lot less for me to talk about. Thanks to you listeners for your interest, your retweets, and your downloads of this show and others in the Blizzard podcasting community. And as always, thanks for listening.
This podcast is part of the Frozen Fox Media Network. Visit us at frozenfoxmedia.com for information about this and all the other content we offer. You can also find us on Twitter @FrozenFoxMedia. Frozen Fox Media, cool content for the gaming community.